A production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Bargeon.
Here.
Hamel.
Here.
Hunt. Killer. Olson. Schleckaway.
Here.
Fly.
Here.
Sorensen. Thompson.
Here.
Hanneman. Van Gerpen. McLaughlin.
Here.
Quorum present.
We do have a quorum present. At this time, I'd like to greet the internet audience as well as welcome all of the individuals that are here to hear testimony. Today we are, I'd like to welcome our pages, if you'll come forward and introduce yourselves at the, push the button so it looks green so we can hear you.
I'm Don Beck from Pierre.
Welcome. And turn off your cell phones. And at this time, I'd like to announce that we will be hearing testimony today on the one bill, and it will be on House Bill 1067, and the bill is entitled to repeal certain provisions regarding the state aid payments for increasing and decreasing enrollments. And as most of you know, the governor has included this as part of the, his balancing of the budget. So this is a repeal type of action for laws that are basically on the books right now. So as we proceed here, we will be taking testimony today. We will go to questions, but we will not take final action on this bill today. So just so that we're all on the same page on that. So at this time, I'd like to call for the proponents. Okay, before we do that, we'll take the minutes. Chair will entertain a motion for approval of the minutes. Moved by Representative Bruner, seconded by Representative Fargan. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. We will entertain the proponents for House Bill 1067. And if you have not signed in, please do so at the back of the room. And be sure that we have your name so that we've got all of the proponents, and then we'll take opponent testimony. Good morning, and do you want to go ahead and state your name? And
good morning, Mr. Chairman. My name is Jim Terwilliger. I'm a budget analyst as well as the economist with the Bureau of Finance and Management. House Bill 1067 is a bill that's part of the governor's budget as well as his revised budget, as we all well know. So what this bill does is repeals the supplements that were added 2 years ago for the increasing and decreasing enrollments. The decreasing enrollment supplement allows school districts with declining enrollments to be paid for the fall enrollment or the average of the current fall enrollment and the prior year's enrollment. So the decreasing supplement actually pays for students that are not in the seats. The increasing enrollment supplement is an adjustment in the state aid formula and makes payments to schools that grow by 5% or by a minimum of 25 students. As I mentioned before, and I'm not going to go into a great detail about the state of the budget, we all know the budget is in a difficult position. Currently, we are exhausting our property tax reserves. If you do not pass this bill and you put both the increasing and decreasing enrollment supplements back in, it's going to cost you approximately $6.8 million. Now that assumes that House Bill 1068, which is another piece of the state aid formula, would pass. Now that deals with the levies. So the levies, that $6.8 million assumes that the levies will be at the same level as paid 2009 levies. And that number can fluctuate depending on what happens with House Bill 1068. I just want to clarify that. So again, if you do not pass this bill, the breakdown is about $3.3 million from the increasing enrollment adjustment and about $3.5 million from the decreasing enrollment adjustment. Now keep in mind, as we go through the testimony today, that It's still proposed that the K through 12 schools will get a 3% increase in the per student allocation in the state aid formula. With the revised recommended budget, no providers are recommended to get an increase, nor are any state employees recommended to get any increase for their increased costs. We know the current state of the budget right now, we're about a $30.5 million structural deficit. If we add this back in, we're going to be at over $36 million structural deficit, and we're going in the wrong direction. Again, I talked about the property tax reserves that have been exhausted. If you add this back in, we're going to be dipping into the budget reserve fund. Now, that is set aside for unintended, unforeseen problems. Now, I know in our own personal lives, when we know things are going to be tough, that we're not going to go out and spend our savings account dry. So I just want you to keep that in mind as we go through testimony today. I know it's a difficult decision for everyone, but again, this is something that's recently been put in the state aid formula. And I know we've gotten by through this prior to when this was in the formula. So that's something I'd like everyone to keep in mind as we go through today. If there are any questions, I can sure address those at this time.
I think we'll hold the questions, and then we'll take testimony from all the proponents, then we'll take testimony from the opponents, and then we'll open it up to questions from the committee. All right. Are there any other proponents? Proponents. Any other proponents? We have one listed as such, but okay. We will now go to opponents. Opponent testimony on House Bill 1067.
Mr. Chairman, with your permission, I'd like to hand out my typewritten testimony. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Dick Thiessen. I'm an attorney here in South Dakota in Pierre, and this will be my 29th year appearing before various committees of this body for a variety of clients. Today I testify on behalf of two, so I'm going to speak with two tongues if I might today. Both are in opposition of House Bill 1067. The testimony I'm handing out is on behalf of the Associated School Boards of South Dakota. I'm also testifying today in opposition of this legislation on behalf of the Sioux Falls School District. I come to you today asking you to keep in the front of your mind why we passed this legislation some time ago. It is important to the nonprofit organization of the Associated School Boards, as well as the 950 South Dakota School Board members that I represent here today. And it is even more important to the children that they serve, as well as the children that attend Sioux Falls School District. It's important for you to keep in mind, along with those things you were cautioned to keep in mind by the proponent, that this bill that you're considering repealing today was part of a very important larger package that was passed in the year 2007. The package in 2007 were reforms. They were brought to you after a long study of K-12 education funding that was conducted by the Department of Education. They were brought to you after much thought. They were brought to you after much expense in that study. And they were brought to you as a package of reform that would do two things. Part of that package for small school consolidation. The other part of that package was the positive part of the reform. The positive part of that reform attempted to do something meaningful about funding of education. It attempted to deal with the increasing enrollment problem, And it also dealt with the issue of how you would average enrollment when you had decreasing issues. So for you to come today and repeal the reform part of the 2000 legislation will truly mean that what we did after a study of K-12 funding is do nothing more than deal with the forced consolidation of schools. We will have deleted that part of the reform that attempted to do something meaningful in the funding methods that we use for K-12. School board members in South Dakota believe that our finance formula needs to provide predictable and timely funding. That's nearly impossible with increasing and decreasing enrollment throughout this state in the checkerboard method that it occurs without considering both sides of that element, without some method in our formula that deals with the increase and averages the decrease. It was suggested to you just a moment ago that decreasing enrollment simply pays for students not in their chair. But I noticed that he didn't include the comment that increasing enrollment attempts to consider what happens when school districts are absorbing the cost of paying for students that are filling chairs that you didn't fund the year before. We need both sides of that method of funding. We need to consider both the increase as well as the decrease. School districts have increasing populations. They have increasing and decreasing resources. They need to be able to add staff when they have the increase. And they need to be able to average the financing when the demand has decreased. They need time to determine how they will eliminate staff. They need the assistance in doing that. For declining enrollment districts, this money means that they are able to average the enrollment over 2 years' time and able to cushion those reductions as they make them and not leave our school classrooms empty of those who teach our children. If you repeal this law, remember, along with the other things you've been asked to remember today, remember this. If you repeal this, the declining enrollment districts will have to absorb 1.5 years worth of declining enrollment in one single year. You will be asking those districts to deal with 1.5 years of declining enrollment and to do it this year. A task I'm sure none of us would want to have to perform. So when you keep in mind, as you were asked, that this is about $6.8 million, keep in mind about what we'll be doing to the long term of our mechanism and method of funding K-12 education. We will be throwing out the window 2 years worth of K-12 study and how we deal with our funding. So I hope you'll keep that in mind, and I hope that you will join the many of us that think this is a big mistake and that we need to defeat House Bill 1067. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Teason. Further proponents on House opponents. We're through with the proponents. Further opponents on 1067. Yes, sir.
Good morning. Shane McIntosh, Parkston School District, and I serve as the superintendent there. Just a little background information. Parkston lies about 20 miles south of Mitchell. We're a school district of about 600 students. We are surrounded and touched by 10 different school districts. 9 of those 10 school districts have opted out of the funding formula. We have not. During the course of the past 2 years, we've lost 12% of our enrollment. And going into this budget planning year, we're looking to have reduced our general fund budget by 10%. Obviously, part of our planning process included the concept that we would be able to average and do that over a longer period of time. And what that would allow us to do is, rather than to fire staff, we would be able to move a little more slowly and reduce staff through attrition. We have an elderly staff. We anticipate that nearly half of them will retire within the next 5 years. I do realize that the state is in a bit of a budget situation, and that the revenues are not coming in as they may anticipate. So I can certainly understand why the governor would want to look at these dollars. A few other things, though, you might want to realize from the school perspective. We have revenues coming in other places as well. Just yesterday, we deposited $400,000 into a CD, and we're getting 1% on those dollars. So our interest earned revenue is going to be down significantly. We anticipate that our bank franchise revenue will be down significantly. We anticipate that the public and school land fund dollars will be down significantly. There's been talk about doing away with the 3% increase to funding education and giving zero. So we've got that looming over our heads. And quite frankly, we have no way to plan for the future. We don't know what's going to happen to us next. The whole idea of averaging enrollment is going to be beneficial. Something Mr. Teason said is taking a year and a half hit of declining enrollment all at once would be very difficult. Now, we resisted the pressures of the legislature to spend down our fund balance. So if you check your books, you'll see that Parkston has about a 28% fund balance, and we plan on using that in the coming years. And I'm very thankful that we didn't use those dollars to spend one-time funds in the past, and that we do have an option. So if this if we're not successful in keeping this, at least I want you to know that we do have an option, and we probably would see our way through it. But don't forget that these aren't the only dollars that we're talking about losing. We're going to lose a lot of other dollars in other places as well. I'd like to touch briefly on one other item, and that's the idea that, that there's a belief that incline or increasing enrollment and decreasing enrollment are two different birds, and in a sense they are. However, I think it's important that the committee realize that the idea that funding phantom students on the decreasing side, while that may be true, you're also funding phantom students on the increasing side. I'll give you a second to think about that. You might ask how that's happening. There's a kid in the seat. Well, that's true. And you're going to be funding that child for 13 and a half years. He's only there for 13 years. So you're funding phantom students either way. I believe both increasing and decreasing and funding both of those formulas is very important for different needs. And I just hope that the committee would take that all into consideration while they deliberate this bill. Thank you.
All right. For all other opponents, be sure you sign in, and the page, will you get the signature here? If you're planning to testify, please get your signatures on the sheets. We did find another one there. Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee. Thank you for allowing us to be here today. My name is Sandy Arsnault, and I'm the president and registered lobbyist for the South Dakota Education Association. I'm here representing 7,000 members across the state, and I'm here today to oppose House Bill 1067. First of all, let me say our association believes that every dollar appropriated for the public education system is an investment in our communities, our economy, and our future, and most of all our students. That investment is more important now than ever. I'm not going to go into the details such as why increasing and decreasing enrollment was put in. You've already heard that testimony. I want to take you on just a little bit different route, because when we talk about the state needing to do more with less, and that we're going to have to not fill positions that are vacant, and that because we're doing more with less, our services may suffer. Well, school districts have been doing that for several years. And when you talk about taking away another form of funding through our for our districts, we as educators who walk through that door every day with our one and only goal is to teach the children of South Dakota to learn to the best of their ability, you're taking away resources that we need to do the best job that we possibly can. School districts are already operating on cut after cut after cut. You saw school districts across the state do away with gifted programs, do away with physical education, do away with arts programs, cutting programs and decreasing the amount of time that kids are in school. Those things are all essential to good learning and good learning environments. And we need to keep funding intact at the best possible. Whether we believe that our funding is inadequate or not equitable, if you take away more, it then becomes even more inadequate. We know that it's a tough time, and we know that we all have to do our share. But school districts have been doing this for the last several years. We have been cutting and cutting and cutting. And I ask you to think about that and to think about the future of our children and to change the philosophy that education is a cost, and that it should be an investment in our students, in our communities, which ultimately takes us to an investment in our economic development. I urge you to vote no on House Bill 1067. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other opponents?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the Education Committee. I also rise in opposition to 1067. My name is Jim Hoback. I'm the superintendent at Harrisburg School District. I come here to talk about what I consider to be a flawed system in how we have a lag in funding of our students. I represent a group of schools that are extreme growth schools in South Dakota. Now, I could talk to you about declining enrollment. I understood that. I was superintendent in Clark for 6 years, and every year we saw our enrollment go down. But I'm not here today to talk to you about that. There are enough people that will tell you that side of the story. And there's little sympathy when you come up and you say, hey, I'm from a growth district and I have a problem. People don't understand that. They think that's not a problem, that's a good thing. But it is a problem with how we have our funding coming to schools that are extreme growth schools. I don't think we can paint everybody with that same brush. And I need to show you a picture of the anomaly that Harrisburg is, or Brandon Valley is, or T is in our state. You've already heard the history lesson of how we got here. It was years and years of schools coming here to talk about what happened with schools that had growth or declining enrollment or sparsity. And the superintendents and the schools of the state of South Dakota took the good with the bad when that all came together. And they said, we'll take that. We'll understand that we're going to have a little give, and we're going to see in return some benefits. And now we find that those benefits are being talked about taken away. And I think that we could go into a long time talking about how important trust is in this state. And it has caused the schools to say, hey, how can we depend on what we're told when it comes to state funding? We make our counts in South Dakota of the number of kids we have in September. In September, that count is used for funding the next year. If a child moves to our district in October, let's say they're a junior, we do not see funding for that kid for the rest of that school year. We also do not see funding for that kid the whole next school year when they're a senior. Funding will show up for them the following year. Now, you'll have people that will say, you know, there's 13 and a half years of funding and that takes place, and I can argue that point, but I can tell you that in a school that always grows, such as we are, you never catch up. That isn't a true statement. If we grew 1 year by 10 kids and never grew again, yes, you probably have some argument with that. But that is not the case. We educate that child, for example, for 1 3/4 years without the funding there. So as a result, I have to find the teachers today. I have to pay for the supplies today. We're building schools. We have to heat those schools for those extra kids today. We need those dollars today. And not only with that, if I don't see those dollars, what I have to do in our school next year, we expect to grow by about 250 kids. We anticipate we need at least 16 more teachers, possibly up to 28. We have some classes on the bubble. And if I don't see those dollars, that makes my class sizes go extraordinarily high. That makes us freeze wages in a district that already our teacher pay is towards the bottom. We would lose $600,000 next year. That $600,000 educates those kids that year. That's a bargain for what you do for a child that already is in the count. At 250 kids, I always pick on the Secretary of Ed, that's the size of Avon. There's 50 schools out there that size. They're seeing funding for those kids, and we're educating those kids for a year without funding. If you were to take that funding away from any one of those 50 schools for a year and say, you know what, we're not going to fund 250 kids this year, no one in this state would think that's fair. So I'll paint the picture of Harrisburg. We're this great district with this great growth, and everybody has everything they want. Or I can tell you we're the second to last in spending per kid. T's last. Brandon Valley's about fourth to last. The reason we're last is this funding formula causes that problem. This funding formula causes us to have more kids to educate with less dollars that year. Harrisburg, we're opted out already for $700,000 a year. Our local taxpayers know that this problem exists when we're only getting paid for half the kids, half the money for those new kids. They already are willing to go to that extra step. Now take away that $600,000 and you throw us right back below the cellar where we're already at for what we're spending. The solution, the true solution, and I don't know, and you're not here probably to discuss that, but I have to say the true solution is make the count the year that you fund the kids. Count them in September and fund them that year. You count those kids in September, fund those kids that year, you'll take care of increasing enrollment. You could still put in the declining enrollment factor. We do it right now with special ed that way. So no one can tell you it can't be done. We count the kids in December. They adjust the funding payments for the rest of that half of the year. It could be done that way, and it would be the fair way. And in closing, I tell you this. I happen to serve for a couple years in the legislature, and I know that at times people hear this statement where they say, well, here comes those self-serving superintendents. They're going to step up to the microphone and they're going to tell you how they need, they need, they need. We come out here for one reason. It's for our kids. What I'm talking to you about here is not self-serving. It's for what we need to do that's fair for the kids, for our school, as well as these other issues that you have to deal with. Please do not eliminate this funding that was fair a few years ago, was right to do a few years ago, and nothing has changed from that. I'd welcome questions later. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Any other opponents? Yes, sir.
Morning, Mr. Chairman. Charlie Flowers, Coalition of School and the Mid-Sized Schools. We're also in opposition to this bill because we feel that if you pass something and then 2 years later you take the good parts out and leave the bad parts in, and that's what this is doing. I think Senate Bill 157 had a whole array of different parts of it. Some of them were good and some of them we felt were bad, because one of them was we forced small schools to consolidate. We cut the small school factor funding or froze it. And now we're going to take some more out of it, and that puts more burden back on the local taxpayer, because a lot of these schools still have to pay the bills And so what they have to do, they have to go to the local taxpayer to do it. And it doesn't seem like it's fair that the state does not do their obligation. And we had a bill, I think it was in the Senate education yesterday, that dealt with the sparsity factor. And there was some really compelling testimony of the areas that have not a lot of students, but they have an awful lot of cost, and they need to have to fund that. And we surely hope that this body will consider this. You know, if you look back, I can remember when, because I was in this body, and I can remember when the thought was, everybody has too much fund reserves, too many fund reserves. We have to cut that back, have to spend it down. So the school districts, in trying to comply, they spent their reserves down. And yet the state still had their reserves. They kept building their reserves up. But anyway, what happened? Now you're in a position where those reserves would look awful good to these school districts in these real dire times that we're in. If they had some of those funds, they could stay with this crisis for at least 2 or 3 years, because I know there were some school districts that had quite a little money, or they felt they had a lot of money, but they spent it all down. Now they don't have money. Now they're borrowing money. I think that we really need to take a good look here and not start and put a school district on a program, and then less than 2 years later, we take it away. Some of these school districts set their budgets and did their teacher negotiations based on some projections that they would have this money coming. And it's particular, I think, as Superintendent Holbeck said, where they have districts that were growing dramatically. They've kind of somewhat figured on that revenue coming, and when they set their budgets, did their teacher negotiations, that was figured in. Now, are we going to take that away? Does that seem like that's the right thing to do? And I would urge you to defeat this bill. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Flower. Further opponents?
Morning. Chairman McLaughlin, good morning, and committee members. My name is John Peterson. I'm the Executive Director for School Administrators of South Dakota. And school administrators is the superintendents, high school principals, elementary principals, business managers, curriculum directors, and special ed directors. For your information, I also was a superintendent in South Dakota for 26 years in four school districts, Chester, Harrisburg, Beersford, and Pierre. And so I do have a little bit of experience, I guess, out in the field in our public schools in South Dakota. I'd also like to start out and say that we realize, or at least I certainly realize, that this is probably the most challenging year that I've ever seen in the legislature. In all the years that I've been coming to Peer, and I'm sure many of you can say the same thing, you know, the funds are just not available. And school administrators and educators realize that, and we know that there's going to have to be some concessions made, and there's going to have to be some give and take. I mean, we realize we're not going to get, like the old days, our 1.5, our 1.8, our 2, our 3, sometimes a little bit more. We realize that's not going to happen. And so we want to, I guess, like we say in education, we want to negotiate. But this is not an area to negotiate, hopefully. I mean, this is necessary. 2 years ago, you know, the legislative body saw fit that small schools, and I think Mr. McIntosh represented the declining enrollment well, and Mr. Holbeck the increase, and I don't think I have to get into that. But the legislature said, yes, this is unique. And you know, I represent all superintendents, all schools, and I want you to understand that all schools support maintaining increasing and decreasing. We do. We believe that it's a fair issue and that you should support it. You know, the other thing that's somewhat interesting is that for quite a while we've been accused of having fund balances that were inappropriate. And I would, you know, I as a resident of Peer right now, I live in Peer, you know, I was a superintendent, I wish I could have left a bigger fund balance. because I know the next 2 years are going to be tough. They really are. They're going to be very difficult. And so, if you were a business manager or a superintendent with unpredictable funding that's not consistent, how do you do a budget? How do you negotiate with teachers that are underpaid? I mean that's another issue. I mean, last year we were talking about minimum teacher salaries. We talked a lot about that. We're not talking about that this year because it's really not an option. It's not an option. But teachers are underpaid. And our schools have to have some consistency. And that's what bothers me, is that it just seems like so many times we come in with a new area, but then as a superintendent you have to sit down and a business manager and say, well, will it be there next year? It's almost at a point, seriously, where schools, I think, have to say, everything's one-time money. Everything is one-time money because I'm not sure it's going to be there next year. And it really has a drastic impact. I also would just remind you, I think our teachers and our administrators do an unbelievably wonderful job with limited resources. But everybody does in South Dakota. I mean, we're all in this together. We're a unique state, and I'm very proud of our state, and I would do it all over again. I'd live in this state and raise my family. But we are efficient out there. I mean, there's not a lot of fluff. And so don't take away declining enrollment. Don't take away increasing enrollment. It'll hurt kids. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Peterson. Are there any other opponents?
Morning, Mr. Chair. I'm Diana Miller, and I'm the registered lobbyist for the large school group. And I'm not going to try not to be repetitious of some of the other things you've heard this morning about how this the program for both increasing and decreasing enrollment came about. I'm going to approach it from a little bit different aspect. I believe that we need to defeat House Bill 1067 for the simple reason of, for those of you that are new and haven't been around, education is usually the last thing that is negotiated in the budget. And we have a long time to come up with solutions yet left in this legislative session. And everything needs to be on the table. I, too, understand the state and have a great concern about where we are with the budget deficit. And I believe all of us are a part of it, as you've heard today, and we all have to make sacrifices. We're all going to experience some pain. But I don't think we're at a point in this legislative session where we ought to be starting to throw everything off the boat or the baby with the bathwater. And all programs ought to be able to be discussed, because there may be modifications that can be made. We may not walk out of here with the same program, but we haven't destroyed the program. And in education, that's critically important to us. So consequently, I think we need to look at this as part of a bigger picture, and we need to continue to negotiate and find ways to look at not destroying everything when we come out of this economic downturn or depression or complete tsunami, so to speak, but we need to look at an opportunity to salvage some part of it. The increasing and decreasing enrollments portions of the education package are critical. And I think you will find that negotiators or the educators in the education community will be at the table also. We understand that this is an important part of the budget for $6.8 million, as it was stated by the proponents, but it also assumes another bill stays around. So it's everything is like a domino effect, considering the budget, and therefore you need to keep things around. Lastly, I would comment that I don't view education only as a cost factor. I view education as an investment in the future. I view education as an investment in economic development. And consequently, sometimes we get a little short-sighted in thinking that we can cut things or remove programs. We cut off our nose to spite our face. Because I know for a fact that throughout the business community, one of the things that companies and businesses look at when they come into communities is the first question they will ask their chamber and or economic development group, what kind of education system do you have? Because they want to bring their kids or the families that they have for their employees into a community that has a strong education system. Now, as taxpayers and as legislators, we have an obligation to fund a free public education in the state of South Dakota. I understand that these are difficult programs, and there are a lot of programs that we've crafted out of education. I'm not naive enough to think that we aren't going to probably lose some or part of all of that, maybe. But this is not the place to start. It's way too early. And to simply repeal and take this off the table in the language, because the money's not in here, the language is. And the language was clearly crafted to be a compromise. So I would encourage you to defeat, at this point, House Bill 1067, because I think you'll see parts of this again in an overall education package. And we need to keep the discussion alive among all of the legislators, both in the House and in the Senate. So, Mr. Chairman, I would ask that at this point in time you defeat House Bill 1067. And I thank you, and I'll stand by for any questions.
Thank you. Any other opponents? Any other opponents? House Bill 1067. Final call. If not, we will close that portion of the hearing, and we'll entertain questions from the committee. As I stated earlier, we will not take action on the bill today, but we will answer any and all questions from the committee, and that portion of the hearing will now be open. So, questions from the committee.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Van Gerpen.
Could Superintendent Holbeck, would you be willing to come answer a question?
I'm not sure yet.
You haven't got a whole lot of time to think, so you better decide pretty quick. Could you share with this committee, I understand in your particular district that you're facing a surge of students, you know, in the past few years. Could you share with us what, I know in the past there's been this huge discussion over fund balance, and I've been a proponent that in favor of the schools having that fund balance in case we come to a position like we are today. But in your case, could you share with us what is your fund balance at the present time?
If I could, I'd like to
try to run them through the chair here. So, okay, go ahead.
Sorry, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah.
If I could, I'd like to go back 1 year before that and tell you that we were a district that had to borrow about three or four times during the year to make payroll. So last year, we ended up trying to do what we could to put a few more dollars in the bank. We're at, I believe, 18% now, which is under what the recommendation is. This year, once we had to go borrow to make payroll, and as a result, we're looking at deficit spending this year. So we're not a fund balance rich district.
Mr. Chairman.
Further?
So you're telling me, Mr. Superintendent, that you are borrowing money to make the payroll?
We did once this year, yes.
And if you can remember, what is the difference in the count that was taken in September of a year ago for which you are being reimbursed for today? What's the difference in number of students?
We grew, I believe, by 240 students this last year, of which about 100 move in during the year, and it's usually around 140, 150 during the summer that we see. Most of our growth is coming through our kindergarten class coming in compared to our senior class going out. So even if I saw no growth next year, you would find that I would have to add more teachers as the people move through the system. So it's an anomaly, and people don't understand it until you live it. But we still see that the growth causes effects even if the kids don't show up.
Mr. Chairman.
Follow up.
This is probably far-fetched, but what would happen if you couldn't obtain the money that you borrow? What if the lender said no?
God forbid. You know, at this point, I don't know what that solution would be. We would have to end up having somebody give us a line of credit.
Thank you, Mr. Superintendent. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Further questions? Representative Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A question for Mr. Terwilliger, please. The governor's proposed budget benefits from your bill. How do the school districts benefit from this bill, either in the short term or the long term?
Representative Thompson, thanks for the question. In the long term or the short term, we're in a difficult situation. In a perfect world, we wouldn't be facing the worst recession in 30 years. Maybe the worst recession in 70 years. I know it's been talked about fairness issues, things of that sort. Is it fair that the state's revenue is going to drop next year because of the recession? I don't think so, but that's reality. That's the reality of it. Everyone's going to have to make some tough decisions, and that's why I think we should keep this bill alive, that everything is on the table. That's why I do think we need to keep this bill alive. But in response to your question, sure, in the long term, you know, if we weren't in a recession, everyone would benefit. We wouldn't have to cut funding to anyone. You know, it's not easy to come forward with a bill that reduces funding to any part of state government. So.
Thank you. Any further, Mr. Representative Thompson? Representative Bruner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a question for Mr. Terwilliger. It's been stated that the true answer to this problem is current year funding. Why can't we get to a position when we fund schools where we fund current year and even get to a monthly average?
I don't know if there's any reason we can't. We just have to be a little bit tougher doing the budgeting process because you have to forecast what's students are going to be in the next fiscal year, but I don't think there's any reason that you can't. You just have to work through some of the issues.
Follow up.
What do you see as some of those issues?
Well, right now, as I talked about before, is we're obligated to balance the budget every year, and right now we just don't have the money to be giving 3% increase, keep everything inside the formula, and as well as increase provider inflation or any state employees, anything like that. It's just difficult times right now. So as far as I think that's something that can be looked at in the future, I don't think there's any reason we couldn't do that.
Thank you.
Other questions? Representative Sly.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And this can be directed to anyone who knows the answer. I'm not. The question is, how many schools are affected by increasing enrollment and decreasing enrollment? And I would like to know the districts too, so I kind of get a perspective of where those areas are in our state. Does
right.
anyone know that?
The folks with the Department of Education would have that detailed information.
Okay.
Yes.
Tammy, would you like to come forward and attempt to respond to that question?
It's going to change.
You want to identify yourself to our audience?
Good morning. Tammy Darnell with Department of Education. It'll change each year because different districts qualify differently. It's going to be right around 20 for the growing enrollment and 100 or 101 for the decreasing. If you go out to our website I showed you earlier this week, and if you look at the FY 2009 state aid, and then the first link on that shows the calculations, on those columns there is a column that talks about it'll give you the number for the two-year averaging. Those will be your districts that are the decreasing enrollment districts and the number of kids that they got. And then there's another column that's titled growing enrollment, and it'll tell you the number of kids and identify with those districts. If you want, just send an email to my department and we can condense it, but if you just want to do it yourself, it's just go out to the website.
Thank you very much.
Yep.
Okay. Representative Schleckaway.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had a question for Diana Miller. thanks for coming up. You represent a relatively small amount of larger school districts. How many, can you tell us, I'm curious on specifics of which ones of those receive increasing, which ones receive decreasing, if you know that information?
Mr. Chair?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. Representative Schleckway, I don't have the numbers, but I have generally, I think, what I think there are in, I represent 11 school districts, and of those 11, two or three are increasing, and the rest would be in the averaging declining.
Any follow-up or anything? Okay. Any other questions from the committee? Representative Boland.
Yes, I have a question for you. Excuse me. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a question for Mr. Flowers. I believe during your testimony you talked about the, if I could use it, the big bad C word, consolidation. I think you used that. Do you see that? Do you see school consolidation as a desirable or undesirable proposition for South Dakota schools?
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Flowers, Charlie.
Representative Boland, I think there's going to be more and more consolidations coming as our population changes in the state of South Dakota. But it, when I was in the legislature, I never felt that we should be forced or should force it upon the local school districts. That should always have been a local decision. That has been changed now, but to a certain extent, up to 100 students. But I think we have so far seen some of the major problems that have arisen by that. For example, Condee was forced to consolidate. They were a school district that was operating on their own. They never got one dime of state money. Well, I shouldn't say one dime, special ed, but far as general fund money. But they were operating on their own. And yet we forced them, the legislature forced them to dissolve. You've got some problems I've seen down in that, is it Greater Scott and Greater Hoyt, I think, that there's been a move down there. That there are school districts that's been for 40 years have been going across the river into Iway to school. And there was legislation last year which would have forced them to join a school district in South Dakota. And I don't know whether they're getting a better education, but I'm sure they're getting as good education over there as they would be getting had they, and maybe less transportation costs for them or less movement. So I don't know how, whether I'm answering your question right or not, but I do say that there will be more consolidation as the years go by. When I was a school board member 40 years ago, we had a consolidation in our school district, and we had four towns that closed. And I'm sure that someday down the road, that school district is going to consolidate again, and it's probably not going to be very far down the road that they will have to consolidate again because we're losing our students.
Thank you very much. Just I am very intimately aware of the Scott and the Hoyt districts. That's what region I represent.
I'm sure you are.
One other follow-up question, Mr.
Shirley,
if I could. As far as the current legislature is concerned, do you believe that we are bound by decisions of past legislatures when current situations change dramatically? What is your philosophical view on that?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, I suppose my philosophical view is that every legislature is a new body of people, and everything that has passed, I've seen in the years that I've been around here, there's been a lot of changes. Something has passed, and eventually down the road it changes, and the situation changes, and you have to look at that. So I don't believe that any legislature is really bound, if you look at it that way, but they past history will be a benefit to the legislature if they look back and see what has happened in the past and go forward from there. There was a legislator that I used to, when I first came out here, and many of you know him, old Gordy Peterson. And I used to have people come to me and they would ask me to put in a bill. And I'd say, well, let me think about it. And, you know, and I would, a lot of times I would go to old Gordy Peterson, who was here, I think, almost since statehood. And Gordy would say, well, you know, we've tried that before and it didn't work. And he'd tell you why it didn't work. And there was a lot of legislation that I probably could have put in, but I didn't after visiting with him, somebody that had been around this process a long time. And he had that knowledge of what has been, what had went on and what had worked and what hadn't worked. I think he's a pretty good friend of mine. I always try to look him up when I go through Wall just to stop and say hello, because I really had a lot of respect for his knowledge.
Thank you. Thank you.
Further questions?
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Representative Van Gerpen.
I'd like to call Superintendent McIntosh, if he would mind, for a couple questions. Mr. Chairman, if I may ask a question.
Certainly, or a series of them. Latitude granted.
You figured me out, Chairman. Okay. Superintendent McIntosh, I think you indicated in your testimony that your particular school has lost some students, numbers of students, in the past year or so. So you would be falling into that declining enrollment category. Today we're talking about students, and that certainly is the primary focus. But it's been my experience that this is a broader discussion than students, because I think we're talking about communities as well as students. And I've observed in some of these smaller communities the interest, the excitement, the enthusiasm that the people of the community take in their school and their athletic events and the success of their debate teams, their declam teams, and all of that. And I think it's unfortunate, but I think in our discussion we sometimes forget the impact that our schools have upon the emotional and health of our communities. And so we're not just affecting students, but we are affecting the people of our state who are paying the taxes to provide the schools as well, when we end up in a consolidation or losing that identity of a local school. From your experience there at Parkston, could you expand on that or share some insight?
I would be happy to. I think you're absolutely right. School is community. Parkston is a community of about 1,600. And then, of course, you've got your rural outlying areas, and then Dimmick is also a part of the Parkston School District. I would say we're probably the second largest employer in the school district behind the hospital, and we employ about 100 people. So the fingers of the people that are associated with the school district are far-reaching into the community, and every little move that we make affects someone. I told you we were looking to cut about 10% of our budget in the past 2 years, and we are doing that. And of course, when you cut your programs, you're affecting people and individuals and individual interests. I'm going to use our band as an example. I think we have a fabulous band, and I don't know if any of you have got to have a chance to hear them play. They were in Washington this past year and played at the 4th of July parade in Washington, D.C. They're a phenomenal group. We have to cut the band program in order to make budget. And we are anticipating a huge revolt at the next school board meeting, and any of you are welcome to come and join us if you like. But the bottom line, and every time I sympathize with them. I'm with them. I want our band to stay, and I don't want anything to happen with it. But choices have to be made, like much like you're going to have to make. And that goes throughout the whole school. And the decisions that we make are on Main Street, and we hear about them the next day every time. And this is a very tough time for the community, and you've got to remember that every dollar that the school doesn't spend any longer is one less dollar that's going into the local economy, and it makes for a tough time in your smaller communities. And I guess we're not one of the smaller ones around at 600 students in the school, but we're still small by most standards.
Thank you, Superintendent. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Now's the time for your questions. We're going to, even though we're not going to take final action here, now is the time to get your questions out so that we've got the individuals here in the room. Representative Elliott.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to ask this of Charlie Flowers.
You're a popular man today.
Mr. Flowers, you talked about closing Con D, they never took state aid except for special education, and now they are being consolidated into other school districts. How much is this costing the state to send these children to the different schools?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Representative Elliott, I can't tell you, but I'm sure this Department of Education probably could. What was their enrollment? 35, or it wasn't a very large enrollment. But if say there was 40, that's $100,000 about. But I don't know. I really can't tell you. We'd have to look that up. But I know there was some costs that are now being picked up by the state, because now these students are getting state aid where they weren't before. Could I go back to Mr. Chairman? I thought of something that Representative Boland, when he asked me
I'll
about
give
that.
You, I'll grant you some latitude here.
Oh, right. Thank you. I appreciate it. I think Representative Boland really, when I got thinking after I sat down, the only thing that the legislature is really bound by probably is the Constitution. Other than that, there's a little latitude. And I might add that the Constitution says we have to provide an education for students in South Dakota.
And Mr. Chairman, if I could just comment on that.
Representative Boland. Now, remember, we're in question. We're not into a lot of dialogue. I've granted a little latitude here, so.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. It seemed as if the testimony that we were hearing was that because past legislatures had made decisions, that therefore we were somehow bound by those. And I just wanted to get your comments as a former legislator, what your comments were on that. And thank you very much for that.
And Mr. Chairman, I thought about that after I sat down, that actually that I think that's probably is the Constitution is our what we're really bound by.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay. Last call here. Any other questions from the committee?
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Representative Boland.
I have a question for the superintendent from Parkston. What is the demographic future of the Parkston School District as you look at your high school compared to your enrollment in grades K through 3 or K through 4? How do they compare?
That's a wonderful question, and I don't have an answer. And let me explain why I don't have an answer. I'm in my sixth year at Parkston. I spent 9 years in Oneida prior to going there. Upon arriving there, we were putting together budgets, and we were going to be down 20 students. They didn't leave. Everything, our enrollment stayed static. The next year, very same story. Going into budget time, we were anticipating to be down X number of students. Come first day of school, our count was identical. That happened for 4 years. So in our wisdom, we anticipated being down in the fifth year, and we put a budget together thinking they would be back. Well, they weren't. So if you're asking, you know, in comparing what our kindergarten class is to our senior class, right now we are anticipating a drop. And we anticipate that to occur again like we have for the past 6 years. But there's no guarantee anymore. I was talking with some friends of mine who graduated from Lyman High School and just south of here, and we don't remember people coming in and out of school. They come weekly now. They roll in and out like nobody's business, and you just can't one more thing we can't count on is if kids will be there. We do anticipate, however, to answer your question finally, a slight decrease in enrollment over the next few years, but we hope to level out.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Any others? I think you've had some general type of questions on demographics, specifics, and a lot of others. So I think with that, unless anyone else has a question, we will close this hearing, and it will be announced later when we call for the action on it, but the action and or will come later. And I think it allows this committee the opportunity to address all of the issues that I think you heard discussed today here, so that you can put it in perspective into the total responsibility of providing an educational opportunity for our students in the state. So with that, we're going to close the hearing on the 1067. And we will now, I think our sponsor or for the next bill coming up, what's the number on that one? 1149. And I think you would like to have that postponed. Is that correct, Representative Bruner?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate your indulgence in that. I think we're not quite ready, and I think this topic is going to take a little more education than for committee members possibly and others and before we bring that. So I would just thank you for your indulgence in putting that off for another day.
Okay. So with that, anything else to come up before the committee? Representative Sorensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If you might just permit a comment. First of all, I arrived a little late, and I apologize. We were at a wonderful prayer breakfast with the governor. But just because some didn't get a chance to speak today on the issue that was on the topic on the agenda just a little bit earlier, doesn't mean we don't have passionate feelings. And there was the question part, as your chairman stated, and the comments will come next week. But some of us could have probably asked some questions to get some of our points of view in there. But believe you me, we will speak out in the comment part of this bill and have some passionate things to say. Thank you.
Yeah. And I want to thank all of the individuals that did come, especially from out of town, to testify. It makes the process and the hearing effective, and we sincerely appreciate your being here, giving your testimony, and the committee members are very conscientious here in taking into account all of your concerns, and I know it's not an easy decision for any of us, and we will continue on with the process. So with that, we will chair will entertain a motion for adjournment. Moved by Representative Hunt and seconded by Representative Bruner. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Meeting is adjourned.